Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper. I'm down in Nashville, Tennessee at the 50th anniversary of the National Wild Turkey Federation, or at least their 50th annual convention, I think.
Absolutely.
And I run into an old, very old friend of mine, Keith Wallach. Man, Keith, it's so good to see you.
Oh, hey, great to see you down here. Running around, do your thing, and enjoying life.
Oh, absolutely. And there's no better place to enjoy life than amongst 100,000 turkey hunters.
So. That's right. That drive you... If you don't like turkey calling, the wrong place to be, isn't it?
Boy, isn't it? It is noisy in here. And this is just the first day. I'm wondering what day three is going to be like. I'm going to be hearing turkey calls in my dreams for the next 6 months, I think.
Absolutely. And I guarantee you, if you want to learn something, this is the place to come.
You're absolutely correct. Because, hey, you can stand at these booths. They'll teach you how to run a turkey call.
Right.
But Keith Walling is on the Woodhaven Pro Staff. Woodhaven has been in the turkey call business for a long time.
Yep. A lot of custom calls, handmade, hind pen put together. Just great sounding. Cherry Classic, Mahogany Class. The one I used last year, Horace did a real nice gobbler with it last year. It has that real sharp, crisp, clear yelp to it. Cuts real good. If there's anybody down here and they're down here at the show, come on by the booth and we'll run them calls for you and put them in your hand and let you decide what they sound like.
Well, I just walked by the booth and saw you standing there. So, of course, I had to talk to you, twist your arm a little bit, get you to come over and do a podcast with me. But, boy, what a booth. Good looking booth there. It's just so many calls. And, Keith, you and I both are old enough that we've seen this industry from its birth almost,
Be honest with you, Bill. I never thought it would get as big as it's gotten, and I got into it, back in the late 70s when I first started calling. And then I ran into you when I was a young guy.
Yeah,
and you were a young guy, too, buddy, doing your thing.
We got over that, though.
We got over that.
Yeah, we've known each other for decades.
Decades,
man.
Yes, sir.
Even actually turkey hunted together a couple times. But do you know, I've just been here, this is first day of the show, and I've been here just a few hours, but do you know how many discussions I've already had about the topic? I would have never thought.
I'm surprised that you can't walk through here 100 yards and get stopped by somebody that wanting to talk to you about turkey calling hunt.
I guess you'd call it an advantage that you and I have because we've been around the industry for long enough.
Right.
It's difficult to go very far without running into somebody that you know. But that's a wonderful thing. You and I could sit and reminisce for hours about the good times we've had together.
Absolutely. And there's people, unfortunately, are not with us anymore.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's always kind of a sad story, but it's coming for all of us, and here
Absolutely.
We are. I'm 76 years old, still having a blast, man, at this stuff.
Man, keep going as long as you can. I plan on to it. I'm turning 65 this year.
You're just a pup.
Yep. I'm glad you said that. I want you to
an old pup.
But no, I going back to thinking about old times with you and the late 70s, the 80s, when turkey calling and competition was just getting wrapped up and going,
Yeah.
And some of the guys I started with are all, good callers, champion callers. I can't, you know, I can't name them all. I don't want to miss anybody, but, you know, old Ray I, of course.
Oh, absolutely.
I used to hunt with him a little bit when I was a young pup, and he taught me a lot.
Ray,
you know.
I'm glad you brought Ray's name up. Ray's, of course, one of my favorites in the outdoor.
Absolutely.
And I've told this story 2-3 times already today, but Ray's the first big-time turkey hunter that really brought me kind of under his wing, and I remember him calling me and that I'd like for you to come to my media camp. And I know there was a long pause on the phone. Media camp, what's that?
You had to explain that to him a little bit, huh?
Yeah, he had to educate me a little bit. But I've been to many, many of Ray's camps, and, man, always learned something every time. And, of course, Ray, boy, was he ever driven. He's one of these guys that get out. I don't care if he had a dozen guys in camp. He'd get out and try to roost a gobbler for all of them. You know,
absolutely.
Get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and cook breakfast for everybody, and get everybody.
And you know, he's a heck of a cook, dude.
You're telling me.
I see that on Facebook, and I said, "What?" I'm thinking, Ray, open a restaurant.
Yeah, I was just looking at a photograph a few minutes ago. It's one of his camps over on a big piney, and I'm not a bad cook myself, but he had a great old big skillet of gravy, you know, getting ready for biscuits and gravy. Worst time, I took it out of his hands and I held it while we took some photographs so everybody'd think I made it, you know. But boy, he'd go all out, the biscuits and gravy and ham,
yep,
and eggs and bacon and sausage and on and on and on. And you know, around those old beat up old dinner tables and stuff is where we built some friendships, Keith, that are still going strong today.
Absolutely. And, you know, and he's one of them that come to my mind because I learned the good all-around basics of turkey calling and hunting when I was young. And I was so wrapped up in it, wanting to learn. And
yeah,
then the competition come along, and he hooked me up with that, helped me with that, along with, you know, back in the day, 70s and 80s, a lot of your turkey callers It was a family camaraderie thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And you
called against some of the best callers there ever were, Walter Parrott and those guys. But
yep,
you did rather well yourself in that calling competition.
My goal when I first started, Bill, was to place it in the Grand Nationals, this contest here, in the top five.
Yeah,
that was my goal when I first started, and I had no idea that I actually would do it in 1985. And the guys with me, Walter Parrott, Paul Buskey, Dick Kirby, Joe Drake, that's the guys I was standing with, and all legends, you know.
Wow.
And I had no idea how that would work for me, but I kept practicing, kept going to contests, hooked up with my buddy Steve Stoltz, of
yep,
course, and we traveled all over the country learning how to turkey call and competition call. And our learning aspects of that came in the 1981 U.S. Open in Blaine, Pennsylvania.
Blaine, Pennsylvania.
And we thought we were something. So we
were.
Got up there, and we got a good ass, you know what, kicking.
Oh, yeah.
And we learned. Now, that's one thing we did. We learned what it will take to compete with these guys, how to do it, what to sound like. And we learned. That was 1881. Well, I got lucky. I did my work. I worked at it. And then, like I said, in 1985, I did place in the top five in the Grand Nationals.
Well, man, that is quite an accomplishment. But what was the learning curve like for, you know, I know you turkey hunted. You used those turkey calls and everything. But when you start getting that calling scenario, the competition, the calling contest, that was an entirely different ballgame,
oh,
correct?
Oh, absolutely.
What'd you have to change to compete?
Exactly. And you got to, you know, when I first started, the first thing you do is you know, the mistakes. You know, you got to eliminate those mistakes, and you got to have that turkey rhythm.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you work on your sound, sounding as much realistic as possible, you
yeah,
know, and then put your program, the big deal, the program together to compete against these guys, because they already got an upper hand on me when I first started. You know,
well,
they
got to start somewhere, though.
You got to start somewhere. And I tell in these young people,
yeah,
if they want to get into turkey calling and turkey calling competition, go to some of these contests, watch these pros do it, And there's so much activity now that we didn't have back then. The DVDs and YouTube and all that extra stuff to help you teach you how to turkey competition call.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's there. You just got to go and watch it. And don't be afraid to jump in there and try it and learn.
Absolutely. And all kinds of light bulbs are coming on as you're talking. I think it was you I did this to. But it was a calling competition somewhere. I think it was you. If you come in the room, there's all kinds of signs to turn your cell phones off. Guess who didn't turn their cell phone off? I'm sitting around on the front floor with media badge on, you know. And I think it was you walked down on stage. You're just getting ready to call. And my phone rang.
I
remember that stare.
That might have been the Mid-America Open.
I think
ago.
It was. I remember the stare burned a hole through me.
Yeah. But I forgot you, Bill. Yeah, I didn't.
I think he came to me later and I thought, he's going to beat me up, you know. But you were pretty kind. I thought, man, oh, man. I was so embarrassed I won't crawl in the seat in the front row,
hey,
you know.
If you think you're the only one that happened to, you're wrong, buddy.
I was the only one that day.
I hear a lot of it off and on, believe me.
Oh, absolutely. Boy, but what fun. And again, you know, we said we couldn't believe that things have come to the point they are today. But in your opinion, now you know how you grew up, how you started turkey hunting and everything, and you've watched decades of this now. What's the difference in today's turkey hunter and a turkey hunter from the 70s and 80s?
Well, the learning ability. I didn't have the technology and the stuff that they have now back in the 70s and early 80s. I didn't have, I mean, I had a 45 record. I think I had a cassette tape from Penn's Woods with, who was it? Rob Keck was on it.
Really?
And I just run those things to death, listening to, you know, and, another one that came along was Leroy Brongart.
Oh, yeah.
Leroy had a 33, big 33 record, and it was a basic, very basic record, what to do, you know.
Well, I tell you, I started, I come out of military and all in 73 with Superintendent Merrimack Spring Park out there, Woods and K. Woods. Wildlife Fair was brand new. They didn't even have signs on it yet. So I basically had all myself to turkey hunt. Show you how much confidence I had in myself. I'd never turkey hunted before. I went to Western Idaho on Saturday and bought an old Lynch one-sided box call, and I was going turkey hunting Monday morning. And this is honest to God truth. I wore my old Army OD green stuff, had the Army jacket, you know, and I get out there, Woods and K. Woods, that top Highway 8 parking lot, and I just walked down over the hill. The way stood by a big old giant, you're going to laugh yourself silly, black oak tree. Reached down in the pocket of my Army jacket there and pulled out my box call. It's still in the box in the wrapping.
Oh.
I was standing there with a flashlight reading the instructions. It says, go. And it didn't say, yep, yep, yep. It said, go, yelp, yelp, yelp. So I scratched on that thing, yelp, yelp. Oh, that sounded like a hog, man. And I am telling you, honest truth, a turkey gobbled at me.
Oh, my God.
That turkey was probably a mile away. And I'm reading, man, I was shaking. I was so excited. You know, first time I ever stroked a box call and a turkey gobbled at me. So I'm standing there in the dark reading away, you know, and it says, wait 30 minutes and go yelp. I sat down by that tree, set that box call down myself.
Look
at
you.
I'm watching. I got down 29 minutes, you know, 30 minutes. Yelp, yelp, yelp. Turkey gobbles again. Now, that's how much I knew about turkey calling. That went on for 5 days straight. I never moved, and the turkey never moved.
Hey, you got a response to him, buddy.
I did. He gobbled at me all week.
Yep. I went, be honest with you, I went probably a couple of years, 2 or 3 years before I killed one, you know. But I made every mistake you can think of.
Well, sure.
You know, because you just didn't know. You know, and nobody, I couldn't go with anybody to teach me. So every time I made a mistake, now, believe me, it went in my memory bank in my head.
Oh, yeah, we were all in the same boat. And I didn't kill one for 5 years, but I had an opportunity. Every year I could have killed a Jake, but I read enough material. Man, I didn't want to kill nothing but a longbeard.
Right.
Finally, that fifth year, I was hunting on a farm across from Merrimack Springs, way back in there. And, boy, a couple of turkeys just charged in. One was probably a two-year-old gobbler, but the other one was Jake with about a five-inch beard. They went behind the big oak tree, and I said, first one steps out to get it. Well, Jake stepped out, you know, but he was a 17-pound Jake.
There you go.
So I was pretty proud of myself.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. You know, even a lot of people complain, you know, say something about killing a Jake, but when you're learning,
you too.
And you don't haven't killed a bird before, and you just killed one or two, I mean, a Jake is like killing a trophy buck to you. You know what I mean? Oh, it was a thing to do.
Oh,
you know?
Absolutely. It broke the ice for me, and it's just like I kind of relaxed after that, you know. And I took my time and tried to stay calm. That didn't always work. But it started rolling for me. And, you know, today, I've got 107 turkeys under my belt, so I'm kind of proud of myself.
Dude,
you know?
You've done well. You've done well. Yeah, and I tell you what, I had probably, I started around Callaway County.
Oh,
that was my first turkey place I went to in the county by Jeff City. You know, New Bloomsfield,
yeah. Sure.
That area right there. My dad's best friend had a real big farm up there, and I was all by myself.
Okay. Oh, wow. Well, that was a great way to go, though.
Oh, my gosh. But the turkey population back in the entire, if I heard a turkey gobble, man, I was jumping up and down for joy and running over there.
Oh, you know? Absolutely. We were both doing the same thing. Hey, we're going to take just a short break here, folks. Don't go away. I hope you've enjoyed this discussion with Keith Walling. This guy's got decades of experience under his belt. He's been on several pro staffs over the years and competed in the competitions. And it's just really made a mark for himself in the world of hunting wild turkeys. But we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high abounding purple mountains' majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Stoltz with Woodhaven Custom Calls, Mossy Oak Camouflage, and Drury Outdoors. My turkey hunting tip for the week is actually working on soft calling. Incorporate and work on your soft stuff. In my opinion, soft calling is the deal sealer when it comes to working in a turkey. The reason why? Because they know good and well those low, soft sounds are what turkeys do the most. So it's going to sound more real to them when they get in close and they hear the softer calling. Plus, it kind of puts that guesswork into where maybe they think you're a little further away than you really are, bringing him in closer for the shot. And I will give you an example of working on soft calling. A few tips ago, I did some loud calling, some loud yelping. I'm going to do it again. This is my, this is from Woodhaven Custom Calls. This is my modified cutter. It's in our mouth call line. But I'm going to do some yelp, some regular yelping. I'll give you an example about toning it down and learning the softer stuff. This is the louder yelping. There's a time and place for that calling, especially when they're further away. But when they're getting closer, tone that calling down like this. You incorporate more soft stuff in your calling, you will have better success in sealing a deal. When that gobbler does commit to your location, it will bring them in that last 20, 30, 50 yards, whatever you need to get the kill. That's my turkey tip for the week. I'm Steve Stoltz.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I hope you enjoyed that first segment. Keith Walling, he's on the Woodhaven Pro Staff. He's also going to be one of the judges of the finals this year at the NWTF National Wild Turkey Federation, their 50th convention. Wow, that's pretty special, Keith.
Well, I think, you know,
hey, you're making history. You're going to be a judge at the 50th.
I've judged the friction finals a couple different times, and it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing what they can do with these calls nowadays, these friction calls, boxes and slates and glasses or whatever. It's amazing. The sound of them is so realistic sounding, you know.
It really is. Of course, my hearing's not near what it used to be. And even back in the days when you were calling, Walter Parrott was calling, I was asked to judge one time at the St. Louis, the big I turned it down because you know what? I could pick Walter Parrott out of a barrel of monkeys, man.
Absolutely. And what Walter, Steve, Mark Drury, you can go on and on and on. All those guys had their style.
They
and
sure
their,
did.
And their sound. See?
Yep.
And that's one thing I would focus on, to telling young people that, again, that want to get into turkey competition, watch how they're doing it, but not try to imitate what they're, as far as the sound. You imitate your sound.
Exactly, because you know, we're all distinct individuals.
They're all different sounding turkeys. You know, work on your rhythm. Of course, your sound. Try to be as realistic as possible. And watch these guys, how they present the call. And that's how you learn. And next thing you know, if you keep it up, you're going to place or win something.
Well, that's just... I never could bring myself to do that because I just wasn't so concerned about sounding as good as you guys could.
I'll tell you another story. Was both Bill Seibel.
Oh.
Drummer Bill.
Oh, very well.
And he tried it. He tried it, and he goes, he come back later on, and he says, I'm going to leave it up to you guys to do this turkey call competition. I remember that best, plain as day.
I figured that out pretty quick, but you know how it is. You listen to yourself. You listen to somebody else. I kept thinking, man, I don't sound anything like those. But I kill turkeys, you know.
Hey,
you
don't that's have what to, it's all about.
You don't have to be a competition.
Absolutely not.
To kill turkeys.
Rhythm, and sound and hunting ability. Those three things. And the big P word, patience.
Oh, absolutely.
You got to have it, buddy.
It took me several years to develop that.
Absolutely.
I chased turkeys all over Phelps County trying to catch up with them.
Well, but I think old Harold Knight said that. I'll sit there till the cows come.
Yeah.
You know, that's almost what you got to do.
You know what? I learned a serious lesson. One of the farms I hunted on, there was an old gentleman who used to come from Anderson, Indiana. He was a big wig in our church organization.
Yep.
But he planned his schedule so he could be in Missouri during turkey season.
There you go.
And that guy killed more turkeys after 11 o'clock than anybody I ever knew. I said, man, how do you stand to sit there all morning? He said, that turkey gobbles in the morning. He pinpointed exactly where I'm at. Yeah, he may run off with two or three more girlfriends.
He's late
in the morning,
back.
He still remembers exactly,
exactly where you're sitting at.
And exactly, pinpoint you.
And you know, and that what you mentioned, that 11 o'clock stuff, some of the best times and some of my best hunts have been 10 o'clock on till closing time was at 1 o'clock at one time.
After I developed the patience to do
exactly.
it. Exactly. But this guy, I can't recall his name, Roscoe Snowden. I can't believe I remember that name. But Roscoe was a tremendous turkey hunter. And he said, you know, I generally wait till about 10:30 before I started calling again. And I killed most of my gobblers during that time frame. But he said, you know what? I didn't give him credit for being that intelligent. But finally, a gobbler came in a few minutes before 10, and I hadn't called again. That gobbler remembered exactly where I was.
And, you know, and another thing I would point out, too, because of patience, when that turkey gobbles that far away from you, is like you said, he knows exactly where you're at, and it might be an hour, it might be 2 hours, it might be three, but he's going to swing through there, maybe not saying a word, okay?
Yeah.
And but that's where the patience comes in at, you know? And sometimes your old gobblers will gobble at that distance, and the next time they gobble, they'll be right on your hip.
Yeah.
On your back.
Exactly. But one of the great things about killing those late morning gobblers, first one of those I killed, that was such a sense of satisfaction.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? I was in his home and stuck it out till, hey, he kind of gave up and came in, you know. And, man, I mean, killing one early morning is fun, but I like to hunt.
Absolutely, you know, and it's all
like
over. After you pull that trigger and drop him, it's all over.
Exactly.
You know?
Of course, I've been greedy before. Early in the morning, you see maybe two or three, four gobblers together, and you could have killed the smallest one. But I want that biggest one, you know, and I wait, hoping he'll come back, and he don't come back.
Yep.
Now, that kind of sucks, but it happens.
Yep. And there again, remember we talked about earlier about learning and stuff. When I was in a learning curve there in the late 70s and early 80s, my first gobbler that I called in was actually at 10 o'clock.
Really?
And it was early in the morning. He did exactly what you said. He was way off. And I said to I told myself, well, he can't hear me.
Yeah.
You know, because he was so far off. I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
Well, you know how it is about 9:30, and it's cold outside in the morning. It starts warming up, and that sun hits your back and your neck.
Oh,
And next thing you know, your eyes are getting a little heavy.
Well, I'm known as a chief napper of the woods.
Yeah, and I had my head hanging down, and I actually heard something behind me, and I thought to myself, boy, that squirrel's getting awful close, you know? And the next thing you know, he clucks, and I about come unglued. You know, and I kept talking to myself, don't move, don't move. And then I started putting two to two together. That sound that I was hearing was him scratching.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was a squirrel jumping around, you know. And I let him walk off, and where I couldn't hear him, and I slowly turned around, and he was gone. And I yelped four times, and he gobbled, and I about dropped a gun. And here he come, slowly walking straight back into me, and I took my time. I was shaking like a leaf. I remember it plain as day. And I went to pull the trigger, Bill, and the gun wouldn't go off.
Oh, my goodness.
And I forgot to put the safety off. Well, I flinched a little bit when I did that, and he stopped, and he just stood there. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying to myself, did you just blow this?
Yeah.
And next thing you know, he takes a step behind a big tree, and I put my finger up, pushed the safety off, and got back on him, and he stepped out. I pulled the trigger and dropped him.
Wow.
Now, that was like killing a Boone and Crockett buck to me.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
but the crazy thing, I shouldn't even tell this on myself, but three times in my turkey hunting history, I had pulled the trigger to the sound of click,
click.
Never put a shell in my gun. But I killed one of those gobblers. One time I had seven gobblers abreast, all full strut, coming up a logging road in the woods. I was sitting on the left side of the road, and I just let them come and come. And at 20 yards, finally I killed a gobbler on the left side. Next week I was back there. It must have been that same group of gobblers. And worked them a bit, and I'm watching a bunch of them. And all of a sudden, I caught some movement right over my right shoulder, cut my eyes around, and I got a gobbler in full strut in a little opening, standing on rocks and green moss, you know.
Beautiful
thing. But I come around to shoot him. I had to shoot him left-handed.
And oh, my.
Such a beautiful bird. I pulled the trigger, click. I rolled that gun over, and I always kept the shell right in my shirt pocket.
Uh-huh.
And I managed to slip that in, close that thing, and kill that bird at 11 yards. He was so beautiful, I wanted to mount him that close. I was worrying about blowing his head off, so I held high. Keith, one BB hit that turkey right between the eyes.
That's all it needed, though, didn't it?
Yeah.
And he's dead as a darn nail laying there, wasn't he?
I come so close to missing that bird. If I'd have messed it up after having that second chance, I'd have really been upset. Well, Keith, you got some calls laying in front of you. Not only they beautiful things, I listen to you run them a little bit. But run these calls for us tell people what you're doing.
Well, actually, this is the mahogany hen that Woodhaven makes. Excellent sounding box call. And I'll tell you, one of the best calls to have in the woods with you is a good old reliable box call. There's times that this box call will work when nothing else will. And it has the distance and it has the volume. And you can tone it down to soft. You can get loud with it. You can do a number of different calls on a box call. But I will tell you, if you have somebody that really knows how to run one and you back off 50, 60, 60 yards from the person, it almost takes your breath away how realistic it sounds.
Yeah.
You know, but there again on turkey calling, it's that rhythm. It's that smooth rhythm and let the call do the work for you, you know. Just a smooth rhythm. Now, when you cut on it, it's just popping the top of the lid on the box a little bit.
So realistic.
Oh, my gosh. I tell you what, between a box call, I always carry a little variety. Because I like to do is I might start out with one of those calls and kind of feel him out a little bit. To see how he responds back to me. If there's a little bit of a pause in between me calling and him gobbling back at me, I might back off a little bit and wait a while and go back directly to a different type of call, maybe a mouth call or a slate or a glass or something. I'm trying to figure him out a little bit because one of those calls, a lot of times, he'll almost interrupt you when you start.
Yeah.
And that's the one that I pour on to. I hold on to that call, and I work him in with that call. So having a little variety is a good hunting tip to have.
Well, I like you using the word variety because I've listened to dozens of turkey hunters over the decades, and you have too, and you can generally start to pick them out, the who's who of turkey callers and who's right. blowing smoke and
right.
whatever, you know. But the guys that tell me that they hunt the same way all the time, makes me wonder if they ever kill a turkey.
Exactly.
Because every day is different. You know
they're
yourself.
They're all different. The gobblers are all different.
Exactly.
You know
yourself. You can go out one day, man, you may get every turkey in the county gobble. You think, go out the next day, and nothing gobbles.
Nothing. And a beautiful day.
Yeah.
And there's
and
nothing.
What happened?
You know, and then there's, what do you do? You know, well, I've done it many a times because I had to work, of course. I had a job.
Yeah.
And I took a day or two off. Well, I'm going to hunt on that day, you know, and it's like you said, you go out there and it's absolutely beautiful. You schedule that day and everything's sun's coming up. Everything's calm and you don't hear a thing.
Yeah, that's so disappointing, heartbreaking.
And you go, what do you do? What am I going to do? Well, I learned there again in my early days, being patient and I do some fall hunting in a way. Okay. Sitting and calling from a one high point, a saddle is my mm-hmm. favorite.
Yep.
And I'll do a series of calls there, and I won't say a word for probably 15 or 20 minutes. And at the same time, I'm listening to sort of the slightest cluck. I'll hear the gobble, hear that walking, or hear that roughing in the leads coming. There might be a number, one more than one bird, and they're coming to see, and then they ain't saying a word to you. So, what I'm trying to say is don't ever drop your guard. And that's what happens. And everybody does it. I've done it many times. But when they're not gobbling, I'm doing a series of fall hunting in a way and waiting for them to come in silent.
You and I fall hunted turkey hunting together one time.
Absolutely.
I think I learned this technique from you. When I get mornings like that when they don't gobble, or you get those kind of misty, rainy mornings and they don't gobble at all, use that lost call like you use in the
fall.
20 to 30 yelps. And I do that like every 20 or 30 minutes, and I've killed several gobblers like that. Didn't hear a single gobble all morning.
Nope. And you hear that, if you're lucky, you might hear a cluck or something like that. But a lot of times, and this is a safety factor I want to point out here, they sound just like a human walking in the woods. Okay.
Now, I got a story about that, too.
And me, too.
It'll make you hair stand up.
You always want to, first thing you want to think in your head, it could be a human coming into your calling.
Yep.
I have my gun up halfway. I don't have it pointed at that sound. It's pointed down at the ground. Well, all I have to do is lift it up. Because if you, next time a person's out in the woods and a hunter's out, I want them to think about that. When they hear a bird coming into them, hearing that walking, how close that sounds like a human.
It really does. And I really got fooled by that one morning, one of those misty mornings. We were talking about, I was just doing a long series of yelps. And it was a bad setup. You got to think about setup, too. I was sitting out on a point, but I was only about 12 yards from where that point
dropped
over. Mm-hmm. And I should have backed up some, but I'm sitting there, and I hear this walking in the leaf. Man, I got a turkey come. I brought my gun up. Then it went through my head. Man, that sounds like a person. I let that gun back down to my knee. Mistake. Big gobbler pops up at 12 yards. Now, you know how fast they can respond. I started moving up to shoot that bird. There was a big white oak tree right beside him. That bird hopped over behind that tree and flew straight away from me. No shot.
No chance.
But still, you got to favor the safety side.
Right, right.
I think a dude would have really been upset with me if he'd have come up over that.
And that gun's pointing right at him.
Pointing right at his face.
You did the right thing.
Yep.
And like I said, I'm really cautious. I do guide people off and on. And I always tell them exactly what we just talked about. I said, you know, keep that safety in mind all the time.
You don't have to in the world of turkey hunting, man, because we all know. Now, we've made it this far through a career, not had any mishaps like that. But, you know, we're already in our careers. If we'd have shot somebody, we'd have been done.
And we'd been done.
Yeah. You've been done in the industry. What would it do to you as a person?
And you know a point on that you just talked about. What kind of shells they have nowadays.
Oh, my goodness.
If you happen to shoot a person with TSS.
Yeah. It's over.
It's over.
Yeah.
You know, that's where safety is so important.
It really is. We just cannot stress that enough. Well, you've got another call in front of you there.
Yep.
And I'd like, if you would, here in the last few minutes of the program, give us a tip to go with that call that's going to help somebody out there in the spring woods this
year. If you're using a friction call, of course, you always want to a little worry about the moisture indicator.
Yeah.
What kind of morning? If it's a foggy, like you were talking about, a foggy, misty, humid morning and stuff like that, sometimes that will affect these box calls and slate calls and different stuff like that. I always like to keep my box call or my slate in a Ziploc bag. I kind of carry them in my vest, and especially if it's a rainy morning or something like that. I actually just barely pulled a box call out of the bag and call with it and slip it right back in there to protect it.
Yeah.
You know.
Good tip.
Mouth calls, of course, you don't have to worry about that. But that's why I say having a variety of calls with you to where if it's nasty morning, you just use your mouth calls and you don't have to worry about a thing.
Exactly.
You know? But friction calls, believe me, pay attention on the weather and your humidity, and protect them, because they're like a musical instrument, you know. And if you take care of them, they'll last you forever.
Yeah,
you know. So here's a class called the Cherry Classic by Woodhaven. There again, rhythm is a big deal. The angle of the peg, of course, and turkey rhythm, you know, getting that rhythm down. And cutting is a snap of the peg on the glass. And it go right in your yelping. That's a good sounding call. Woodhaven's booth's here today. Have them come on by if anybody's listening to this podcast in the future. And we'll be down here every year. This convention is one of the best places to pick up a call, find one you like, talk to the hunters, learn some calling techniques, learn some hunting techniques, and go for it.
Absolutely, man. And folks, if you haven't been out in the spring woods turkey hunting, you're missing one of the most thrilling things on the face of the earth. Because, hey, man, I'm itching already. You know, we're all here. We are at the convention, and absolutely, I've been watching turkey hunting videos, and I just bought a new choke for new shotgun.
Did.
Yeah,
you did.
One of the Indian Creek chokes.
That's what I got too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're the best out there, man.
One of the best.
And I've used so many of them over the years and love them, boy. If you don't have an Indian Creek choke for your shotgun, you're missing a
absolutely
little
one of the
on
best,
the performance
buddy.
Performance level. Well, Keith, man, I appreciate so much you coming by and talking to us. Be sure and thank the folks at Woodhaven for letting you go for an hour here.
Yep, they'll appreciate it.
I know if you'd been over in booth, you'd have sold $1 million worth of turkey calls in that hour. So they made a great sacrifice. But, buddy, it's always good to see you.
Good to see you too, Bill.
And come over and go trout fishing with me.
I am already working on that, and I told you before we even started this podcast, I said, I'm watching that trout fishing. And you want to talk about somebody that knows how to trout fish, you talk to old Bill Cooper, buddy. He knows what's going on.
He's fibbing. Turkey callers will do that, you know. But you never come over and float down the river, maybe camp out. I'll even cook for you on a gravel bar.
Now you got me.
Yeah, I knew I'd sew up the deal. All right, we're going to wrap it up here, folks. From Keith Walling, myself, Bill Cooper, we are living our outdoor dreams, and we have for decades. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and enjoy your dreams as well.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you, you could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.